Hello, this is episode 314, and in it, we dive into the second half of my conversation with Claire about building her new sustainable home on the Florio Coast in South Australia. Now, if you haven't listened to the first part of this conversation, I do encourage you to go back and check out episode 313. You'll hear Claire share details about shaping her design brief, choosing her team, and the sustainable choices that she prioritized as she navigated the pre-construction process. You can find all of that, as well as some photographs of her project, at undercoverarchitect.com/313. That's numbers 313. Now, in this episode, you're going to hear more about Claire's project, especially the construction process, and how she got selective about where she chose to hang out online and the kind of information that she generally digested in her project. She was very deliberate about it. And Claire also talks about her mindset, and she shares a load of great insights about how she supported herself to be resilient and back her decisions. She dives into some of the detail about the choices that have made a big difference to her lifestyle and her convenience in her home, and what she would do differently if she had her time over. And Claire also discusses her key drivers or priorities in her project, including her designing a home for how she wanted to feel in it every day in the lifestyle that she wanted to create with her family. Now, remember, if you want a full transcript of this episode, I've got resources for you. I've also got photographs of Claire's finished home. You can find all of that at undercoverarchitect.com/314. That's the numbers 314. Now, let's dive in. I begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of country throughout Australia, and I recognise the continuing connection to lands, waters, skies, and communities. I pay my respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and to elders both past and present. If we haven't met before, I'm Amelia Lee, the architect behind Undercover Architect. Based in northern New South Wales, Australia, I'm a wife, mum, and architect, and I've been working in the architectural industry since 1993. I founded Undercover Architect in mid-2014, and since then it has operated online to help and teach homeowners like you how to get it right when designing, building, or renovating your home. Undercover Architect supports hundreds of thousands of homeowners across the world through their project journeys via this podcast, the website, and our online courses and programs, including my flagship online program, Home Method. Consider Undercover Architect your secret ally. Whoever you're working with and whatever your dreams, your location, or your budget, it's here to support and guide you on this ambitious journey of yours. Grab access to my free online workshop, Your Project Plan, and learn super helpful information to save time, money, and stress in your reno or new build. You can find it at www.undercoverarchitect.com/project-plan. That's projectplan. Now, let's get into the episode. It is always amazing to see the variety of industries and expertise in the homeowners that become members of Home Method. And Claire's career background as a coach, it definitely comes through in our conversation on the podcast, especially as we dive into the mindset of navigating a renovation or a new build. If you listen to my conversation with Caroline in episodes 311 and 312, you'll have heard her talk about how surprising and unexpected the personal growth component of renovating her home was. Claire also shares in this episode about how her mindset helped her overcome her perfectionist tendencies and to have more compassion for herself and any mistakes that she might make. And what I love about Home Method members is that through what they learn and the support that they access, any mistakes that they make, they're significantly smaller and less impactful than those who aren't educated, supported, or guided through their project journey. I really do hope that you enjoy part two of my conversation with Claire. Here it is. What's obviously jumping out at me is just how knowledgeable you've become about all of these things. You know, the level of understanding that you have is so fantastic in terms of understanding how things work, how that works together with the work that you've done with your team. I'd love to sort of, because, and I can imagine somebody who's at the beginning of their journey, who's just dipping their toe in the water, is going, oh my gosh, this just sounds so beyond my league. Like, how on earth am I going to gather all of this kind of knowledge together? This sounds very, just, it all sounds like a lot. And then it's that whole thing of like, we can't unknow what we know. And so people get resistant to, well, I'm just not going to find it out, because if I don't know, then it's not something I have to feel guilty about not doing, you know, in terms of how I embark on it. So how, like, can you talk through that process of becoming knowledgeable and how you tackled, you know, perhaps feeling out of your comfort zone, knowing what you wanted to achieve, but you weren't
perhaps didn't, you know, like how like, because you're obviously at this end of it of 3 years, and it's not been all at once that you've gained this knowledge. So, you know, can you just talk through that process? Because you're not in the industry. So, you know, how has this been for you in terms of what you've done and how you've approached it, and I suppose your appetite for it all in terms of how it's worked for you?
Yeah. That's a great question and kind of hard to answer from the inside, right? So I guess like the first thing that I would say is that it's been longer than 3 years. I'm sure this is true for a lot of the people that you work with, that this is like you know, 5, 10 years of not actively working on a project, but of, you know, subscribing to Sanctuary Magazine or being a member of the My Efficient Electric Home Facebook group, which is a fantastic source of advice. It's, you know, going to a sustainable house day or watching a video online. And so all of this stuff kind of permeates a little bit. It's not that, you know, I'm studying this thing, but it kind of just gets you thinking and asking questions. And then I guess getting into it, like the amount of information is overwhelming, and often I would feel a level of guilt, like I haven't been through all of the modules in the home method, I haven't listened to every single podcast, and feeling like there might be some crucial information in one of them that I've missed, and what am I going to do? But a lot of it is like, and I guess I had to learn this and remind myself of it, is a bit of self-compassion through the process as well, that you're not an expert. I was seeing a therapist for some other things, and I remember kind of embarking on a change, and she said to me, like, you're gonna F this up, like, and that was like, oh, like, she's just like, get over it. And so, like, going into the building, I was like, there are going to be mistakes that I make, there are going to be things that I don't get right, there are going to be decisions that I regret, and just like letting yourself off the hook a little bit. And then I guess the goal is to make those things around the things that the perhaps the secondary, to really focus on getting the most important things right. So I think then part of the learning is just surrounding yourself in the kind of environment and with the kind of people that you feel aligned with. And so that meant a deliberate decision not to be in some home building Facebook groups or not to look at some magazines or websites, but rather to say, no, these are the ones that reflect my values. This is where I'm going to hang out. And it's also about figuring out who are trusted people. Like, you're a trusted person to me. Someone like Jenny Edwards, I'm just going to learn. Like, I'm not going to pretend that I'm going to know as much as she does. So why wouldn't I just do what she recommends? And you learn from these people that you trust and admire and are doing the kind of work that aligns with you, you know, aesthetically, but also in terms of their values. So I think, yeah, just surrounding yourself with that, being open to learning. But the point that you made about knowing when to shut off the information is also really important. I remember the day that my frames went up, I was in a spiral, like, what have I done? This is ridiculous. The walls are too high. This, oh my gosh, I've made a massive mistake. And there were a few points during the construction where that I was like, what have we done? And I could have very easily gone down a rabbit hole of researching again, but that was not going to be useful. So I think there's a part in the process where you're flaring, you're getting information, and that's about you're wanting to get the decision right, and, you know, yeah, making the right decision there. But then there's a point of bringing it together where you have to focus and make a decision, and for me, that's about making the decision that you have made the right one and just backing yourself. And I would honestly have to be, during the construction, I remember driving to pick up my kids from school, and I would just chant like a mantra to myself, like, I back myself to make good decisions, and I trust that I can always figure out a way forward. Like, and just reminding myself that there was unlikely to be any problem that was so insurmountable that I and my team couldn't figure out. And I just had to keep backing myself through that process.
Oh, thank you for sharing that with us. I want to dive more into your mindset generally, because I think it's going to be super helpful for others to hear that, because I feel like it is sort of the elephant in the room that doesn't really get to start discussed explicitly about your projects. But I just wanted to touch on the thing about the making the mistakes and the fact that you were going to make mistakes, because I think that what's underestimated in the process of getting educated for your project, and obviously, you know, you talk to the work that you did to expose yourself to the right kinds of pieces of content and the right environments, and of course jumping into Home Method and being in that community where you are surrounded by like-minded people and you've got that step-by-step structure. And I think then what I see happen is, yes, mistake, like there's always going to be challenges because you're doing a custom project and it's the first time this house has ever been built anywhere on your block of land. But the gravity of the mistakes are nowhere near what they could have been had you gone in without the information, or you don't actually find out how bad the mistake is until you're having to live with the consequences of it in your finished home. And then you realize that, oh, you know, just did not even see that one coming, and now it's compromising your everyday life, or it's creating dramas in the way that you live. So I think it's really, I love that you had your core foundations, to, you know, borrow a building term, so well in place. Like you'd done the work. And then, yes, building up that self-trust, building up that ability, that resilience, that strategic solutions-focused thinking, which has all come because you spent that time and that effort and energy in being in the right environments to do the work. So, and I find it really interesting because I think a lot of people, they want this to be easy. And so, and they don't understand that when something is simple, it's easy, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not going to have a level of complexity and challenge to it. And so when you have clarity about where you're going, what you're seeking to achieve, you've surrounded yourself with that right environment, and you back yourself in, you've built that self-trust and that resilience, then the journey that you're following for the next few years becomes a lot simpler, you know? And so that, I think, you know, the way that you spoke to that experience is really powerful. And I'd love to dive more into your mindset, because I know with your, obviously with your career, you will have a level of self-awareness about this, and obviously seeing it in other people. And it's, you know, it's something we do talk about in Undercover Architect Inside Home Method. It's that you know, some people get blindsided by it. Some people are just blown away that it's playing out in the way that it is, you know, in their renovation, that it does in other parts of their life. How did you find navigating your mindset, managing your stress, you know, all of the stuff that can get drawn up in the fact that this is your home, you know, you're creating this for your family and you're making big investments. Like what did you do to navigate that emotional journey and keep your mindset in check through all of it?
I'm not sure that I did it particularly well, to be honest. There were like a lot of tears, a lot of self-doubt, a lot of angsty phone calls to friends along the way. But I guess I learned a lot from it. I think, yeah, like I said earlier, I think it's about really coming back to what's important and then just having some faith. Like there's a lot of building that you obviously you try to control a lot, you try to get informed, you try to, you know, document things, but there's always going to be this element of I need to trust that I've done the work, I've got to trust that I've built a good team, but there's always going to be some things that are out of your control. And then it comes to about, well, I trust myself that I can navigate these, I trust that I've got a good team to do that. So yeah, a little bit of self-compassion. I wish that I had probably shared more about what I was doing, either with the Home Method members or with other professionals. I think that sometimes, you know, being a bit of a perfectionist, I had a fear of like the critique or the fear of knowing that I was doing it wrong. And so sometimes that led me to kind of just isolate and try and figure out things myself. So having some more support around me and being more willing to ask for support would have been good, but making sure that I always was clear on who is providing it. Like these people are advisors to me. I'm still the decision maker here. I'm not kind of doing what everyone else wants. But I think that probably would have been helpful along the way.
Yeah, that's a good observation. I think we can find it tricky to ask for help because we worry we're going to look foolish or ask a silly question. So, and yet, you know, you don't know what you don't know, and you're not supposed to know everything. So it is that. And I love your frankness about being that perfectionist. And you know, we all worry about being judged. You know, we all worry about what it might show up for us. So I think, yeah. And when your identity is attached to being somebody who is who is a great learner, who loves learning, who can absorb a lot of information, who does the work to be confident in certain positions and those kinds of things, then to ask questions that might challenge that sense of identity that you have about yourself can always be a little bit tricky.
100%. Yep.
All right. So you had that, obviously, that pivot in construction. Was there anything else that, you know, in terms of the construction process that was unexpected, or that was, you know, you mentioned sort of getting a little bit nervous when you saw the framing go up and that kind of stuff. Like how did you see construction, navigate? How long did the construction phase end up going for? Can you remind me?
We ended up breaking ground, I think, November, December of 2022, and we did hand over in September 2023.
Okay, awesome. So just about 10 months,
nine, 10 months,
give or take a bit of time out for Christmas. Yep. So it's like birthing a baby, isn't it? So
indeed.
And so the whole construction process, which is obviously a big chunk of time, how did you find it? Were you obviously you were visiting site regularly, you know, having site meetings? How did you feel as a single woman, like navigating that and working with your team in that environment?
Yeah, so I'm really lucky too. I was living just down the road, so it was really easy to pop past the site and check in and things and how it was going. The thing that I really liked about working with Sam from 35 South, and one of the big advantages with working through a builder through the design phase, is you get to learn about how they communicate and if they can communicate. And I'm a big like emailer and Sam was fine with that, and so we do a lot of correspondence through email, we'd meet on site, and so he was really receptive to that kind of communication. So I think being able to test that and establish, you know, both ways how communication would work early, that was really good. It was just a joy to be able to see it go up and to actually have a relationship with the guys that were building it. And I think that it does matter that, you know, to wander down to site with a bag of icy poles on a hot afternoon, like it does matter. And to be able to say to these people, like, you know, this might just be a job you're building, but this is my home and I'm so grateful for the effort that you're putting in. And so to be able to celebrate them when we did with the guys on site, when we did the air tightness test, I think it was really nice to have these moments of connection with the team. The advantage of doing quite a bit through email is that you have this written log rather than just the phone calls. And I know that that's something that you talk about a lot, is, you know, making sure that you have that evidence, because there are a lot of decisions that you make. And I think that in hindsight, again, maybe we needed to get clearer about documenting those in a single place, because again, I did a cost plus contract. So that meant that there was a little bit more scope for variation along the way. So just really making sure that we had those really clearly documented. But again, I think it really goes to a lot about the like the relationship that you have and the values that you have, and that you build a, like, has so much influence over how this project turns out. And so I really wanted that relationship to be really positive and respectful, really grateful that we were able to achieve that.
Yeah, and that tip about obviously creating the paper trail, thank you for sharing that, because it is super important. You won't remember all of the decisions that you've made either, so for you to be able to go back and look through that documentation becomes very important. How did you go about selecting all of your materials and your products? Because obviously they would have had a very strong relationship with your sustainability goals. What did you do to sort of upskill yourself there and to work with your team? And was like there any point of contention in sort of the things that you wanted to use versus what the builder might have felt was, you know, low risk to use, and those kinds of choices as well?
I think we were pretty aligned throughout. There were some things that I definitely wanted to use. Using recycled brick was important to me, and that was largely an aesthetic decision rather than a sustainability one. I just really like the look of recycled brick. The area in which I built has an encumbrance which requires a 40% masonry construction, so meant that we were going to have to have some brick in the build. But then we played around with some different lightweight cladding options. I was quite keen on using WeatherTex. I thought that again, I liked it aesthetically, kind of worked well in terms of the kind of the construction and the values that I had as well. And we ended up using James Hardie fine texture cladding for a portion as well. And that was, I think, that was might have been Lockie's suggestion to bring in that material. So again, I think if everyone's kind of clear and aligned on the vision, then it's easier for them to make recommendations that are that align. Again, I was quite keen to use polished concrete floors, both for the thermal mass but also aesthetically and practically. I heard you talking about it recently, I think on a short video. I love that I don't have to clean it often. It's just,
They hide all manner of
it's,
sins, polished
oh
concrete
my
floors, don't
gosh,
they?
it's so good. So I think that again, coming into the conversation with pretty clear ideas about the things that mattered. And then in terms of other selections, like my bathroom and laundry tapware, that was really low down the list of priorities. Other than having highly water efficient shower heads, everything else was pretty low down the list. And so it was just like I walked into Tradelink and said, "Oh, that one, that one, that one, that one," and it was really about kind of simplicity and budget there. So again, it's knowing about where do you want to invest and what are the other things that you can let go.
It's interesting that because you make that those choices of those interior fixtures and finishes, which is where most people's attention is focused, because they're like, those are the things that I can handle and touch and kind of understand. I can get a tile sample and that kind of stuff. Whereas obviously, understanding what brickwork might look like across, a wall that's 6 meters wide can be tricky for some people to wrap their heads around. And I think too, also, because you can see the price of a tap and you can see the price of a toilet. And so you can kind of have a sense that you might be kind of navigating your budget in terms of making these decisions. And they're the things that you're going to have around you. So they're going to have an aesthetic stamp. You make it sound quite casual in the way that you chose them, but seeing the photo, some of the interior photographs of your home that you've shared, you've created a stunning environment internally that works incredibly well holistically together. And I think what really comes through is just the home has this lovely light-filled, light kind of feeling to it. And ease and comfort to it, and then the connection with outside, and there's an integrity about the materials. There's a naturalness about the materials and the colors that you've worked with. So it's really interesting again, because I think that even though they felt quite casual, like it sounds, you're sort of explaining them like they're quite casual choices, they were obviously so driven by your core foundations of what you wanted to achieve that it made it much easier for you to choose them quickly and choose them from those kind of avenues.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point that I probably hadn't thought about, that and maybe the ease with that decision making was a little bit about the relative priority that I saw there, but also about just absorbing the aesthetic that I like. And that's years and years worth of just like knowing that I like that kind of look. And so maybe it was less of a conscious decision to say, "You're right, this is the exact tap style I want," but just that kind of sense of knowing, oh yeah, like that's the style that I like, that's the style that I like.
Yeah, it's beautiful, Claire, to see how it's just all come together. I'm wondering if you can just spend a little bit of time telling us what it's like to live in as your finished home, like how it's working for you, and if it's kind of living up to your expectations, now that you've been in it a few months, before we jumped on, you said you actually kind of had to dig from the depths of your memory about what it was like to kind of navigate this project. I do feel like building and renovating is a lot like childbirth, where you forget at the moment that you kind of handed this baby or this finished home. Like what's it like living in the physical demonstration of what you have been able to achieve with the intention, effort, time, money that you have invested, and the way you've corralled this whole process together? Like, what's it like for you?
Sometimes it's quite surreal. I was out just watering the garden before I got on the call with you, and kind of looked back at the house, and I feel like it's crazy sometimes that a thing that exists in a, like an envision or on a piece of paper, like it that it now exists in three dimensions and it's actually real, and that still blows my mind sometimes. But it's a really lovely house to live in. It does have a nice feel, and it does have a nice, light, and they're not, things that there's no kind of formula for achieving that. It's almost there's a range of factors that go into having that. So yeah, and it just works really well for my family. I really love how we're able to gather around the kitchen bench. The connection with outdoors, the flow there is really nice. That the kids have their own space, but are never too far away. It feels right size for us. I also really love that the mural in the front hallway is one of my favorite things. So I got my friend Genevieve Burt from Gen and Tonic. She's a mural artist, and she did this wonderful mural in the entryway, which totally transforms that space. And then using, I let the kids choose the colour for the door of their bedrooms and their blinds. And so to having these little pops of colour around the house is, but just makes it feel really joyful and fun to be in. I really love that at the end of my hallway, I've got windows at the end of the hallway and both have views of, you know, trees. And so just catching those glimpses when you see things working. And at a really practical level, one of the things I thought about sharing was how important it is to think about not only how you want the space to look, but what you want to be doing in the space. And one of the things that was in my mind is that I want it to be easy for the kids to go outside and go to the beach. And so that really means like, okay, so which door are they going to go through? Where are we going to wash our feet? Where are we going to hang our towels? And the one that I think about a lot is where are we going to store the sun cream? And I've got a really great spot for storing this, the sun cream. And that's a daily thing, putting on your sun cream. But making that easy and built into the way your house functions, like, I think that like getting really granular like that, and that's not about, you know, I want this dimension of here, I want this height. It's about like actually going through in your mind, okay, well, we get up at 7 and we move here and we move here, and really just imagining yourself existing in this space means that you're going to, create a space that works for you.
Yeah, that's amazing. And did you, like, if you take yourself right back to the design, is that something that you kind of formulated before you started the design process, or was it as the design was sort of coming out, you were like, oh, actually we need X, Y, and Z?
No, that was so clear. The sunscreen thing was so clear throughout. And like the whole, like, where are we going to put our devices? You know, because I want somewhere that the devices can be charged, but they're not super present. So thinking about the things that almost like the points of friction in my existing life. And it's like, no, I want to design a house that makes all of those just really easy. And I think, you know, for parents of kids, like, there's just stuff and there's notices and school bags and just really thinking through about, well, how is this going to work in my house? And because sometimes it can be easy to think, oh, well, I'm going to build this beautiful house, but it's like for some imaginary family, it's like, well, I'm not that family. I'm not going to clean my floors that often. Or so actually thinking about, like, what does this family need? What is realistically the amount of cleaning and maintenance I'm going to do? What is the realistic use of the space? Yeah, it's been really important. But it is a lovely house to live in. It feels really comfortable, both in terms of its temperature and the kind of air quality, and in terms of the function as well.
Oh, it's music to my ears, Claire. You've just, like, you became a design detective before you dived in, and you literally have, like, interrogated and diarized, you know, what your life needed to be to work really well. And it is that thing, you know, we have those conversations about how do you set the house up to support the habits that you want in your future lifestyle so that, yeah, you can. I got this question just recently from somebody who was asking about, you know, if there is a really lovely kitchen actually going to help them be able to cook more in a more healthy way and be able, you know, feel like they want to cook more regularly. And I said to them, well, if you're not somebody who's passionate about, you know, sort of cooking and eating healthy food, then, you know, the amazing kitchen's not going to all of a sudden convert you into somebody who can cook. But you can't underestimate what happens when you design a home well, so you actually just not, your brain isn't occupied by all of the clutter of getting life done in an inconvenient way. You know, when you actually have a house that supports you living in a streamlined, convenient, functional way, it's amazing how much then your brain is freed up to then have bandwidth for other things, which is like, oh, actually, maybe I can spend some time thinking about how we're going to nurture ourselves nutritionally. And, you know, I can step out into the garden and think about growing veggies, because they're literally just, you know, I've got this house that draws me to outside and I want to be out there. And it's so lovely to, like, have you seen that in terms of the domino effect in, you know, your life and your work, that having, you know, we talk about your homes being the launch pad for your lifestyle. Have you seen that sort of play out for yourself compared to where you've lived in the past?
Yeah, I think that certainly thinking about, yeah, the function, you know, making it really easy to pop a load of washing in, or, you know, not having things like, you know, in the depths of the house, making it really easy to move between different zones. The kitchen works quite well. I really love how it functions. And like you said, I'm not a huge cook, and so I didn't do the, you know, multi-oven butler's pantry extravaganza. But I wanted a house that, in terms of the kitchen, I guess the priority there was being able to cook and interact with my family at the same time. So making that the design, you know, priority in the kitchen. Yeah, but certainly for the kids, what I really like is that it's an easy house for them to feel safe in, being outdoors and indoors, and for them to, yeah, for them to just be able to navigate and use themselves. Yeah, so it's, yeah, working really well.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to add that you think people need to hear about making their project a reality based on your experience?
I guess the one I've been thinking about, well, what would I do differently if I had my time again? And probably the one thing that comes to mind is around engaging a energy efficiency assessor earlier in the process. So I think I worked really well with having the designer and the builder early on, but I would have brought in an energy efficiency assessor. By the time we got to that point, and I think you've talked about it a lot, when you at that like the end of the approvals, you just want to get started. You just want to sign a contract, and you feel a bit like a client. Like, I don't want to hold things up. Like, and you're just over, right? Let's get moving. Let's get into it. So I think, I mean, while we achieved an excellent result there, I'm noticing being in the house that there are probably a few windows, primarily around the windows, where I'm like, oh, I might have changed either, I might have tinted them, or I might have kind of changed the sill height slightly. And just working with an energy efficiency assessor, maybe to do a little bit of back and forth. I think one of the things I've learned is that some energy efficiency assessors are more transactional than kind of less of a
Collaborative.
consultant and more of a, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, finding an energy efficiency assessor who was willing to actually provide suggestions about, because I think my instinct is that there were some small, really small tweaks that we might have made that would have just, you know, changed the thermal performance and the kind of the comfort of the home slightly. So that would be my advice, is find a good energy efficiency assessor and pull them in early.
Fantastic. Again, yeah, like obviously, we've got those fantastic sessions in Home Method that we did with Sid too, where he shows how you can use so much of that data during the design phase to actually make, like, you know, help you make data-driven decisions. So you're not guesstimating at, you know, whether windows are going to need to be double glazed and or you need a particular level of insulation. And yeah, what star rating did you end up getting on the house? Can you remember?
7.8.
Yeah, so fantastic in terms of, you know, at the time you were going through, the benchmark was 6 stars. So now we're obviously requiring 7 stars, but you're already, you know, future proofing beyond that. So I can imagine your bar's very high
Yeah,
though.
it is. And to be honest, the house is so comfortable, and I do have a split system air conditioner now, which is helpful, but I think that I'm just noticing, especially with the summer, I'm like, all right, that window is like, we're getting a bit more heat gain than I'd like. But the advantage now that I have is being in the house and seeing where the light falls is that I'm able to plan my landscaping a little bit differently. And so now I'm thinking around, okay, what might we plant here? And you know, having that time and space to be in the house, I think a lot of those issues that I have around solar heat gain that I'm getting at the moment will be easily mitigated by some clever planting around the house.
Yeah, most definitely. That deciduous shade and those kinds of things will be super helpful in, and that also will feed into your desire to have that strong connection with outside and to feel drawn to outside as well, to be able to have that kind of environment around your home as well.
Absolutely.
Claire, I can't thank you enough for how generous you've been in sharing your journey with us. It has been so lovely to watch how you have created this haven for yourself and your family. It's been so clear how intentionally you have made this happen for yourself and the way that you have upskilled yourself. I think you totally undersell your role and what, yeah, just what you've been able to do in terms of how you've been able to make this home a reality. And so I think it's a total testament to what you've been able to do for yourself and your family. And it's exciting for me because I know that you've applied to be in the Sustainable House Open Day as well. So you've also got an attitude that you want to share this with others. You want to help others actually see how this is possible because your value set is based on a much bigger view of how you would love the world to be. And I love that Home Method attracts homeowners like you because, yeah, we're all sort of seeing our homes being a reflection of the kind of world that we want to create. So thank you so much for being here. Just super grateful to be able to spend this time with you.
Thank you so much. And yeah, thank you for all the work that you do. I think that the Home Method and the podcast has been super useful for me, not just in terms of like the practical resources and tools and advice there, but just feeling like you have other people walking this journey with you. And yeah, for the support and the, you know, having a bit of a cheerleader along the way, it's been really great. So thank you.
It's my pleasure. I've loved cheering you on. So thanks so much.
And that's it for part two and my conversation with Claire. There are so many gems in there for you to learn from as you navigate your new build or renovation journey. And that sunscreen conversation, it's such a great representation of the detail to think about as you mentally rehearse the daily activities that you're going to have in your home so that you can ensure that your design sets you up for convenience and enjoyment in your everyday life long term. The takeaways that I have from my conversation with Claire, well, there are so many, but let me summarize my top five for you. So number one, Claire's intentionality around sustainability in her future home clarified so many decisions for her as it created non-negotiable priorities for her. And this is so worthwhile for anyone to do so that you simplify your decision-making overall. Number two, the idea of creating just enough house is a great one, and it certainly helps you manage your budget and be very deliberate about the spaces you do include in your future home. Number three is thinking about how you want to feel every day in your future home as it supports your ideal lifestyle. That will mean you'll be able to drill into the details of what your home design actually needs in order to make that achievable for you. Number four is choosing a great team and building great working relationships with them. It is not accidental, okay? You hear how Claire chose based on aligned values and involved her builder early. She also focused on ensuring communication was clear and respectful whilst maintaining agency in her project. And number five, lastly, Claire's work on herself and her own mindset, it got her in a position where she was able to back herself, working to get the right information, input, and research when making her decisions, and then letting those decisions play out rather than second-guessing them the whole way through. And of course, a bonus number six, it has been such a joy to have a front row seat to Claire implementing what she's learned through her project research and preparation as we've supported her journey inside Home Method. Undercover Architects' involvement in projects of our Home Method members, it's often quite long, you know, often longer than anyone else in their project, apart from them, of course. And as you heard, Claire joined Home Method several years ago, so it's been super exciting to see her new home be completed and to see her now sharing her knowledge and insights, not only here on the podcast, but also including her home in Sustainable House Day. Now, remember, if you'd like to grab a full transcript of this episode, plus links to helpful resources of your project for your project, and I've got photographs of Claire's finished home as well, you can find all of that by heading to www.undercoverarchitect.com/314. That's numbers 314. And if you'd like to join homeowners like Claire and get the support and guidance you need to get it right in your home design and be confident as you navigate your project whilst enjoying the experience and staying true to your goals and vision, then Home Method is definitely where you need to be. You can become part of a vibrant online community that shares your aspirations. You can benefit from mine and other professionals' expertise through the step-by-step guidance that we provide, actionable insights, and personal support. And of course, with a structured step-by-step approach, Home Method empowers you to expertly navigate your project through easy-to-follow phases, comprehensive videos, templates, and checklists. You'll gain the skills and confidence to bring your future home to life, whoever you're working with and whatever your dreams, your location, or your budget. Head to www.homemethod.com.au or to the website where you'll find Home Method in the menu and you can jump in now. As always, thank you for tuning in and for letting me be your secret ally. Until next time, bye. Just a reminder, all content on this podcast is provided by Undercover Architect for reference purposes and as general guidance. It does not take into account specific circumstances and should not be relied on in that way. You should seek independent verification or advice before relying on this content in any circumstances, including but not limited to circumstances where loss and damage may result. The views and opinions of any guests on the podcast are solely their own and may not reflect the views of Undercover Architect. Undercover Architect endeavours to publish content that is accurate at the time it is published, but does not accept responsibility for content that may or has become inaccurate over time.